Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity in the highway to the north, this is Safety Wars for Tuesday, May 6th, 2025. Almost forgot what year it was. That wouldn't have been bad. Actually, you know what? I gotta step away from this for a moment. Hold on, everybody. Sorry about that. I like to dial into Safety FM stage to make sure I'm up and running. Because sometimes it doesn't happen. So, how's everybody doing? I know I forgot to release the program from May Day. At least on the podcast side of things. We're still up there on the video side of things. And what's going on? Let's see here. Yeah, I had some hardware issues before we got on the air here. And, you know, we had switched computers. That's where I am on the webcam right before broadcast here. And let's see. Where am I? It says I'm broadcasting. It says I'm on the air. So I'll go with it. I'll trust that I am on the air. A lot going on out there. Now, if you're a traveler, like we are in our family. We're getting people traveling all the time, right? Between me and my wife and the extended family. We usually fly out of Newark Airport. Won't mention the name of the airline. It's not a cheap airline. We'll leave it at that. Not bargain basement. And when you hear the airline saying, don't use Newark Airport, that's an issue. It's a major, major issue here. And when you I'm on the air. Okay, good. Yeah, no, it's a major issue. It's sort of like, let's say that you're going to pick your poison here. You're going to use a product. So you're going to use car brand, right, the Acme car brand. And Acme says, don't use our car. Not that, it would be like, well, wait, what do you mean? Isn't it like your job to sell me a car? And here you are telling me, don't use your car? It's crazy. It's loco. So here we have a situation where the airline's saying, don't do it. And there's a lot of stuff going on with it. So here we have, it's all over the news here. Yesterday, it was all over the news up until airtime today because there is apparently a shooting war going on in between India and Pakistan. Well, let's go through this. Air traffic, this is from the BBC. Air traffic controllers at Newark Liberty International Airport briefly lost communications with planes under their control, unable to see, hear, or talk to them. Hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil sort of stuff last week. The 28th of April incident led to multiple employees going on trauma leave, contributing to hundreds of delayed flights. More than 150 flights were canceled on Monday alone, according to tracking website FlightAware. Now, that is a problem. Trauma leave. I mean, they're already shorthanded. Now you're going to have people leaving. But on the other hand, if they didn't really give a darn about their job, I guess they wouldn't have any trauma at all. It would be like, oh, well, we lost, communication. Well, hey, that's the way it goes. Let's go out and have a beer, you know, sort of stuff. No, they care. Now, some of the context that we're hearing that are from this story is along the lines of old antiquated computer equipment, old antiquated stuff out there, not enough people, and everything else. So U.S. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy said on Monday that contact with air traffic was lost for 30 seconds, but it did not mean that the planes were going to crash. Well, this is the whole thing, right? So, and we never went over it on the show on the Potomac airline crash when the helicopter, where he said, people who don't listen to air traffic controllers, the pilots should be fired. I pointed out, if you're relying, and the only thing that you're relying on is an air traffic controller to prevent you from crashing the plane, we got problems. Because if you're on a plane, you're supposed to have multiple, right? Multiple layers of protection there. What is safety? Safety is not the absence of incidents. It's not the absence of illness, the absence of accidents, injuries, or anything else. It's the presence of controls. And for us to have as the only control in place, right, out there was a single point failure, some people call it, not a very good idea. Sorry, guys, not a very good idea. So what you have is multiple levels. So the fact that, so I'm going to reword this. No, what this is what Secretary of Transportation Duffy said. Well, look, we have multiple backups here. We lost it for 30 seconds, but we have other things in place that would prevent any other issues. That would have been the right thing to say. Not, now were planes going to crash? No, they have communication devices, but it's a sign that we have a frail system in place that has to be fixed. Now he recovered that. The FAA also acknowledged in a statement that our antiquated air traffic control system is affecting our work. So they're apparently using either the 5 1/4 or 3.5 inch floppy disk from, pardon me, the 1980s and 90s there. And of course, it comes down to this, the end of the arc. The incident comes as the U.S. Department of Transportation last week unveiled a package designed to boost the numbers of FAA air traffic controllers. The department said it was on track to hire at least 2,000 controllers this year. In February, the Trump administration began firing hundreds of FAA employees weeks after fatal mid-air plane collision in Washington. But that had nothing to do. One did not have anything to do with the other. See how they inserted in there. One really didn't have to do with it. We'll go over the thing. Hope, God willing, tomorrow, the accident on there. Here you go. And this is from 6.02 p.m. Eastern Time tonight. This was out of the New York Post. Remember, it's the New York Post. The 13 flights United Airlines is most likely to cancel at Newark Airport as chaos shows no signs of slowing. United Airlines is nixing routes to and from smaller cities in an effort to contain the fallout from the mess at Newark Liberty Airport, which has seen thousands of flights delayed and hundreds canceled last week. So basically, they got a lot of stuff going on. They got construction going on. You have different things with the air, no, electronics issues and everything else with the whole thing. They have a whole list there. You could go and check it out. I'm not going to guarantee or warranty anything these people say. So we're going to take our first commercial break. We're going to interrupt it. We're going to add music. Where we can, we're going to be adding music. This is from Safety Warrior. And that's a summary of this first set of stories here. I was, you know, a little bit annoying here because, you know, I got to do some post-production here with the music on the video end. But anyway, that's what's going on there. Hopefully you heard that on the audio end, on the radio side. So some other news here. Okay, where are we? You know what? We're just going to do a share screen here. It was like a flurry of press releases here on the from the agencies today. So it was nice. Maybe we're getting back to what it was prior to everything here. So here we have the Department of Labor. Here, right? So today, Secretary Chavez Dramer talks. Skilled construction jobs, workforce shortages during America at Work visit in Tucson. U.S. Secretary of Labor Lori Chavez Dramer joined Representative Juan Ciscomani in Tucson yesterday to see Pima County College's state-of-the-art workforce development program in action. Pima Community Chancellor Dr. Jeffrey Nass, Provost Ian Rourke, President and CEO of the Chamber of Southern Arizona Joe Schnell, and local business leaders joined the Secretary and Representative Ciscomani to discuss collaborative efforts to build a stronger workforce pipeline. Secretary Chavez Dramer and Representative Ciscomani then joined a roundtable discussion with members of the Arizona Builders Alliance. The conversation focused on work shortages in the construction industry and policies that reduce unnecessary red tape to empower workers and businesses. With strong growth in the construction industry, thanks to President Trump's America First policies, it's critical the Labor Department continues our mission to upskill American workers by partnering with local leaders to fill these in-demand jobs. I enjoyed learning firsthand how educators and businesses in Tucson have developed pathways to successful, good-paying careers in construction and building trades. Thank you, my friend Congressman, for showcasing these achievements and explaining our challenges. One thing I've noticed and I've heard a lot about is in this doesn't happen necessarily up north, but down south, in the southern part of the United States and out west, the community college system they really believe in. We have a community college system basically in every community in this area, right, where I've lived, at least New York and New Jersey. Now it's meant for the, you get an associate's degree usually, and now it's meant for the local communities and things of that nature. People take classes there all the time. No, and they get a fairly good education. It's cheaper. Maybe some people, as a financial thing, perhaps they didn't want to go to the college of their choice. They didn't want to leave home for whatever reason, legitimate reasons. And they go to the community college system. Some of them go there first and then transfer out into a regular four-year degree. But up north, probably would have been community college, probably not there. They probably wouldn't want to a trade school or something like that. With that, I digress, though. Right. Secretary, we already went through that one. U.S. Department of Labor awards $3.5 million to continue disaster relief jobs training for Floridians harmed by Hurricanes Helene and Milton. U.S. Department of Labor today awarded incremental funding of $3.5 million to support disaster relief jobs and continue employment for training for Florida residents affected by Hurricanes Helene and Milton in 2024. On September 24th, 2024. Okay. Hold on, we're having audio issues here. Sorry for you guys on Safety FM. There is a way of fixing that. I figured that out. So, all right. Again, you can pick us up on the podcast here. On September 26, 2024, Hurricane Helene made landfall in Florida as a Category 4 storm causing catastrophic damage. The Department's Employment and Training Administration responded by awarding National Dislocated Worker Grant of up to $5 million, with an initial award of $1 million to assist with cleanup and recovery activities in 31 Florida counties. The Disaster Recovery National Dislocated Worker Grant allows Florida Department of Commerce to provide people with temporary jobs focused on cleanup and recovery efforts in response to both hurricanes. Now, I'm going to point this out. If you are a disaster response worker, there is disaster response worker outreach training. We supply it here. Give us a call, 845-269-5772. There's a 7.5 hour and 15 hour course with it. U.S. Department of Labor covers over $1.4 million in wages for 2,620 workers after employer failed to pay overtime wages. Again, this is a, you know, we hear this all the time, especially now with tipping restaurants, that sort of thing. The I think the Fair Labor Standards Act really needs to be looked at. There was some reforms done by the Obama administration and the Biden administration with it. Trump has talked about no taxes on overtime for hourly workers. I can tell you that being a salaried worker out there, and especially if you're on a project with that's a what they call soft money job. It's an hourly, you're billing by the hour. If you're a salaried worker, oftentimes the can you imagine no tax on overtime? Now you get all the laborers and all the other hourly workers just delaying work. Yeah, that doesn't, Jim, that doesn't happen. Oh, really? What world do you live in? I don't know. I can see a lot of salaried workers or exempt from overtime workers getting pissed off. And what annoys me about the whole thing is the I'll be honest. What really annoys me is that you have the government shouldn't be really involved in your work like that. No, you should get what you want, especially in the safety field, right? Oftentimes, companies go out there and they don't pay you enough for this. Well, what do you mean they don't pay you enough? You're able to negotiate. Okay, yeah, great. In a perfect world, you're able to negotiate. But, no, I there are projects I've been on where, okay, we're paying you by the hour. Oh, no, we're paying you salary, Jim. And then you're working a 70-hour week. And there's, like, no legal recourse here. And they wonder why safety professionals get burned out. I got I'm going to pull this up from LinkedIn. Right, so I get solicited because I'm listed as a freelancer, safety freelancer. And that's how it's going to be for the time being. Right, safety freelancing. And I got this message the other day here. And they said, well, it's tacky that you shouldn't do this. Here you go. Right? All right. This is hysterical. Hello, Jim. Okay, so now we're on a first-name basis, right? My name is, I will leave it at that, I am a recruiter with a company. I won't mention it. I believe you make a phenomenal candidate for our safety administration, administrator position, and with our client, and it's, no, not even spelled right, so I think AI did this, with our client in the New York area. We won't mention it, right? We are seeking to hire for this role quickly with a start date of Monday, May 12th or May 19th. They observe notices. What? No, I don't know what that means. The safety administrator is responsible for continuously monitoring, discovering safety procedures, safety procedures and operations to ensure a safe and fully compliant work environment for all employees. Oh, okay, great. So does this person have the authority to hire, fire, or discipline anyone? That's my question. Probably not. So along the lines of, hey, you're supposed to be doing X, Y, and Z. Yeah, well, go back to your office and eat donuts and drink coffee, sort of thing. Responsibilities. Monitor and report on the compliance of daily departmental safety inspections within their assigned warehouse. So it's a warehouse. Analyze and report on buildings found to be out of compliance using Google Forms. Provide safety training for employees on policies, regulations, and procedures. Ensure all safety-related trainings are updated and linked within the training matrix. Serve as the primary contact for accident and incident notification, investigation, and case management. So you're supposed to do all of that. All right. Oh, it gets better than this. Enter all accidents and injuries into Incident Tracker. Ensure a certain company's training videos, they have a learning management system, are assigned to employees and supervisors and track and enter completion dates. Help analyze incident reports, metrics, and injury case studies to institute changes for a safer environment. Okay, now this is the kicker. Here. It gets even, I promise you, it gets better. You must have 2+ years of administrative experience, knowledge of OSHA regulations and compliance, experience in safety reporting and training, and proficiency in using Google Forms and Incident Tracker. Wow. Ability to analyze safety data and implement improvement. Okay, now it gets better. The scope of the role. Contract to hire after 6 months. You have to be on site, and you have to work Monday through Friday, 8 to 5 p.m. That must mean 1 hour of breaks. The compensation. Are you ready for this? Here it is. $18 to $22 an hour. Yeah, 18 to 20. Are these people for freaking real? Are you open to discussing this opportunity further? We are seeking to get people interviewed by this week. Feel free to contact me. And I have the guy's name here. I'm going to give it, right? My response. I don't know what you are looking for, but that is not even a living wage in that part of New York. In fact, it is likely an insult to anyone entry level or higher. In other words, insult to everybody. This also shows that you did not read my profile. How did I get on your list? And it gives me a name and a contact number. Freaking really? Really? This is how much we're all concerned about safety, but we're going to pay you $18 to $22 an hour. Really? And by the way, you're on a probationary basis. Really? Gee whiz, people. Right? I mean, I don't know. I don't know. So anyway, here we go. U.S. Department of Labor recovers $1.4 million in wages for 2,620 workers after employer failed to pay overtime. The U.S. Department of Labor has recovered, and this is a company that you've heard of here, right? If you spent any time in California, this is a major player out there. U.S. Department of Labor has recovered more than $1.4 million in back wages for more than 2,600 employees after finding a large San Jose-based electrical engineering and construction company failed to pay them proper overtime rates, a violation of Fair Labor Standards Act. Wow. A subsidiary of another company has designed and built complex electrical systems for private and public sector clients in Arizona, California, Idaho, Indiana, Iowa, Michigan, New Mexico, Ohio, Oregon, Utah, and Washington. Incredible. Really, you know, ay caramba. U.S. Department of Labor seeking janitorial workers owed overtime and damages after investigation and litigation recovers $3.8 million from Hawaii employers. U.S. Department of Labor is actively seeking hundreds of workers who are owed their share of more than, right? Oh, let me do this. Right. More than $3.8 million in unpaid overtime withheld deliberately by a staffing agency and cleaning contractor after a federal investigation and litigation that followed. The department's wage and hour division found a company in Kilauea and another company in Lihue deprived 1,133 employees of their rightful overtime wages between March 5th, 2021 and November 13th, 2024. Investigators also determined the employers frequently falsify pay records to mask their violations. So there's a double whammy on there. And on 14th of January 2025, the Department's Office of Solicitor obtained a consent judgment in the U.S. District Court for the District of Hawaii requiring the companies and their owners to pay $1.9 million in back wages and an equal amount in damages to affected workers. The judgment also directs the companies to pay $50,000 in civil money penalties given their willful violations of the Fair Labor Standards Act. Again, now, needs to be reformed. Mr. President, needs to be reformed here. Fair labor, it's not fair. Believe me, it's not fair. Here. Department of Labor to highlight safe construction work practices during 2025 National Stand Down to Prevent Falls. So all my customers this week are doing the falls, the standard, right? To prevent falls. It's the Fall Protection Week here. And I tell you, there's different events. Check out the website. We went into it last week. There's free public events listed on the website. You just need to find out where they are. So let's see, over here in Pennsylvania, tomorrow they have one, Fall Protection demonstration, a drop trailer. I tell you, those videos are pretty good, right? Put out there with the drop trailers. Okay. There's also another thing. U.S. Department of Labor awards $3.5 million to continue disaster relief jobs and training for Tennessee residents harmed by Tropical Storm Helene. There. Secretary Chavez Zarima lauds President Trump's America First budget proposal. U.S. Department of Labor Lori Chavez Zarima issued the following statement regarding the release of President Donald Trump's fiscal year 2026 discretionary budget request. President Trump's first budget proposal reaffirms his unwavering commitment to putting American workers first, encouraging and empower states to upskill their workers by expanding apprenticeship opportunities. Secretary Chavez Zarima said, coming on the heels of multiple expectation-defying jobs reports, this budget will ignite even more growth by realigning and improving the Department of Labor's critical mission while slashing costly red tape and allowing workers to keep more of their hard-earned money. The president is securing a prosperous future for all American workers from start to finish, beginning with a good-paying job all the way to ensuring to a secure retirement. Right? Hold on. I gotta clean this up again. All right. So what's the fiscal year discretionary budget? This takes you on over there to the White House, the President's Fiscal Year 2026 Discretionary Budget Request. Cuts to woke programs, fact sheet. So the budget eliminates a $350 million grant program that was a tool of the last administration to push DEI policies into early care. I'm just reading it, guys. Right, this program, federally funding, was provided to create a guidebook on lessons for creating quality care for Oregon's LGBTQIA+ families in collaboration with an organization called Pride Northwest. Budget eliminates $77 million used to indoctrinate new teachers. And DEI, critical race theory and social justice activism, anti-racism, and instruction on white privilege and white supremacy. $6.7 million to Los Angeles to conduct an equity audit and reverse land use patterns that have roots in systemically racist policies. $4 million to New York City to improve environmental review materials, and $5 million to the City of Seattle to redress past harms through legacy homeowner program on there. That's cut. Minority Business Development Agency had a cut also. And you can check it out yourself. The list is very extensive here. They ended the ending weaponization of the federal government. President Trump is laser focused on eliminating the weaponized rot in our federal government once and for all. No longer will our government target and abuse Americans. President's fiscal year 2026 budget restores a government by and for the people. So Biden deployed the ATF, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. Biden deployed the ATF to undermine and criminalize law-abiding gun ownership via abuse of regulatory decrees. The budget reprioritized resources to target illegal firearms trackers, fueling violent crime, and to supply resources for state and local enforcement to track down dangerous criminals, such as MS-13 gang members. The Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Agency. The budget eliminates CISA's disinformation offices and programs that function as a hub in the censorship industrial complex, conspiring against the First Amendment rights of President Trump and his supporters. The IRS. In addition to the IRS being used in past Democratic administrations to target conservative organizations, the IRS has built up a force of 19,000 new employees, as well as implementing a policy to force Americans to report Venmo and Cash App transactions over a low $600 threshold. The president's budget restores the IRS and it's a neutral arbiter, and that will no longer use weaponized enforcement and overzealous rules against the American people. The EPA, and we've covered that here several times. Under Obama and Biden, American businesses and citizens were targeted and harassed by environmental justice directives, tyrannical over-enforcement of regulations, and restrictive consent decrees. The budget cuts funding for these legally dubious and overzealous prosecutions. USAID. The budget proposes the closure of wasteful and weaponized USAID and transfers the remaining programs under the umbrella of the State Department so they can be managed effectively. USAID has strayed from its original mission and has been entirely unaccountable to taxpayers. It goes on and on. FEMA. I'm not going to skip over a whole bunch here. The budget cuts wasteful woke FEMA grant programs, refocusing the agency on sound emergency management. Right? Programs such as targeting violence and terrorism prevention were also weaponized to target parents attending school board meetings or Catholic mass deemed radical traditionalists. Right? So that happened, actually, right? NIH, the budget proposes to reform NIH and focus NIH research activities in line with the president's commitment to make America healthy again, instead of foreign interests. The NIH's inability to prove that its grants to the Wuhan Institute of Virology and Dangerous Gain-of-Function Research are not complicit in or contribute to a possible leak is evidence that it is incapable of holding itself accountable. The NIH has also promoted radical gender ideologies to the detriment of America's youth, including a study titled Psychosocial Functioning in Transgender Youth After 2 Years of Home Hormones, in which 2 participants died by suicide. Again, I'm just reading them here. I guess we'll go into the budget proposal here, right? U.S. Department of Labor issues guidance on independent contractor misclassification enforcement. Right. Let's see. U.S. Department of Labor's Wage and Hour Division today issued, again, a lot of press releases here. Right. This is from last week. A field assistance bulletin providing guidance on how to determine employee and independent status. So let's see where this is. So this is fact sheet number 13 there, right? From July 2008. Okay, this is, and again, they put this up, they took this down, now they put it back up here, right? An employment relationship under the Fair Labor Standards Act, FLSA, must be distinguished from a strictly contractual one. Such a relationship must exist for any provision of the FLSA to apply to any person engaged in work which may otherwise be subject to the Act. In the application of FLSA, an employee as distinguished from a person who is engaged in business of his or her own, is one who as a matter of economic reality, follows the usual path of an employee and is dependent on the business which he or she serves. The employer-employee relationship under FLSA is tested by economic reality rather than technical concepts. It is not determined by the common law standards relating to master and servant. The U.S. Supreme Court has, on a number of occasions, indicated that there is no single rule or test for determining whether or not, whether an individual is an independent contractor or an employee for the purposes of FLSA. Back in the day, they did, but they changed over the years. The court has held it as a total activity or situation which controls, among other factors which the court considers significant. To the extent to which the services rendered are an integral part of the principal's business. The permanency of the relationship, the amount of alleged contractor's investment in facilities and equipment, the nature and degree and control by the principal, the alleged contractor's opportunities for profit and loss, the amount of initiative, judgment, and foresight in open market competition with others required for the success of the claimed contractor. Right there, and the degree of independent business organization and operation. There are certain factors which are immaterial in determining whether there is an employment relationship. Such facts as the place where work is performed, the absence of formal employment agreement, or whether an alleged independent contractor is licensed by state or local government are not considered to have a bearing on the determinations as to whether there is an employment relationship. And then it gives some other stuff. One of the most common problems is the construction industry, where contractors hire so-called independent contractors and who in reality should be considered employees because they do not meet the test for independence, as stated above. So the way I explain this to my customers is this, right? Jim, he's an independent contractor. That means we don't have to supply any PPE. Don't have to do anything with OSHA, blah, 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 blah. OSHA doesn't apply. So what's my first question, do you think? Come on, you know me. You know me after all these years. 440 episodes, something like that. What do you think my question is? Did you tell him, usually it's a him, what time to show up in the morning? And is he using your tools? Yes. Guess what? It's an employee. Simple. Because, okay, when you told them that there was a job here, okay, and did you say, well, there's a job, they're building a building, and that was where it ended? Or did you say, they're building a building, this is how I need it built, this is what the build is, blah, 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 you're doing it wrong, you're not supposed to build it that way, and you're directing the work. Chances are, and again, I'm not an attorney, chances are they're an employee at that point with that, right? Franchise arrangements, stuff like that. Are you directing the work? Are you giving the person a hard hat? PPE, anything like that? Well, guess what? Chances are you're an employee. Franchise arrangements can pose problems in this area as well. Depending on the level of control the franchisor has over the franchisee, employees of the latter may be considered to be employed by the franchisor. So in other words, here, did you establish a relationship? How much control do you have over that person? Okay, I hired a temp agency to do work, but now I'm directing the employees in the temp agency. You got a problem. If you're a general contractor, and now you're giving means or methods to a subcontractor and their employees, and you're managing their employees, guess what? They're probably your employees at that point. You might have an issue. The way I understand it, right? Situation involving a person volunteering his or her services for another may also result in an employment relationship. For example, a person who is an employee cannot volunteer his or her services to the employer to perform the same type of service performed as an employee. Of course, individuals may volunteer or donate their services to religious, public service, and nonprofit organizations without any contemplation of pay, not to be considered employees of such an organization. Trainees or students may also be employees depending on the circumstances of their activities. People who perform work on their own home are often improperly considered independent contractors. Really? People who perform work at their home, own home, at. So this is like your remote worker. The Act covers such home workers as employees, and they are entitled to all of the benefits of the law. So be careful out there, folks. Right, and of course, that okay, what time we got? Okay, we're going to go to some EPA news. Let's take a break here for a moment, and we'll get on back to you here on Safety Wars.
Safety Wars is streaming now. SafetyFM.com.
Have you listened or watched the Safety War show? It does stream live on the radio and on the streamer emers that we have. So if you have not taken a listen to Jim Bozell and what the hell he's doing every evening with Safety Wars, I would strongly encourage you to take a view or take a listen, whichever option is available for you, and take a listen to what the hell he has going on. It will take some deep dives in some information that you might be interested in.
Is your safety training old, stale, and hackneyed? Is your safety trainer still preaching a warped version of behavior-based safety? How about safety training that actually addresses your hazards in your workplaces and is not standardized baloney from 25 years ago? Contact the Safety Wars team at safetywars.com or call Jim Pozell at 845-269-5772. Remember, if you're receiving this message, you are the solution to unsafe workplaces. OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Pozell with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
Yes, Jessica, I am your father. All right. So, some news today from the National Park Service. This was apparently a leak, right here, from somebody. And this is broken by the Washington Post, the reporter's Maxine Joslow. The Trump administration has temporarily suspended an air quality monitoring program at national parks across the country, according to an internal email obtained by the Washington Post and two people familiar with the matter who spoke on the condition of anonymity. Yeah, because last week the administration said if you're not authorized to speak and you speak, you're fired. The Interior Department, which includes the National Park Service, issued stop work orders last week to the two contractors running the program. The email shows the move adds to the chaos and uncertainty at many national parks. The National Park Service and Interior did not respond to requests for a comment. However, a Park Service spokeswoman sent an email that the stop work orders would be reversed, that contractors will be notified immediately. The two alleged contractors are Air Resource Specialists and Desert Research Incident, right, for that. So what is that? Let me share the screen with you here. All right. So this is the Air Resources Management Program. So basically they monitor atmospheric conditions in national parks. So I would think that they do the six NACs, right? And nationally, I mean air quality standards they monitor for. So what are they? Right? Here, hold on. Wow, they got all different stuff here. I don't want to go into the weeds here. But they specifically mention ozone, methane, right, and visibility. But we don't know the NACs are more than that, right? Well, let's see if I remember. Nitrogen oxide, sulfur oxides, ozone, lead, PM, either 2.5 or 10, PM 2.5 or 10, and the last one, right, ozone, right? So for all of those can be measured in real time except for the lead, right? That has to be sent out. I think don't quote me on that. I'm going from memory. But it's focused on the damage to the forest there and what they're involved with. So, again, oops, sorry, Washington Post. And EPA reached a settlement with Scranton, Pennsylvania School District for alleged asbestos-related violations. This is out of Philadelphia, PA. Today, U.S. EPA announced a settlement to resolve alleged violations of the Asbestos Hazard Emergency Response Act, AHERA, right, known as, with the Scranton, Pennsylvania Public School District. EPA alleges the school district failed to include all required elements in the asbestos management plans for 15 schools and to maintain complete updated copies of the asbestos management plans for 19 schools in its administrative office and the administrative offices of those schools. Under the terms of the settlement, the district has agreed to demonstrate compliance with the relevant regulations in all of its school buildings and submit certification of compliance. The asbestos hazard, the AHERA, is in the section of the TSCA, Toxic Substances Control Act, that requires how educational institutions must manage asbestos in school buildings. Again, my question, who are the people that allowed this to happen? Oh, we're glossing over them. Not important. People are important. How about the children? What about the children? Are the children important? That's a question. EPA Administrator Zeldin joins VP Vance in South Carolina, visits Georgia for roundtable with Governor Kemp and local elects and farmers. I've never heard of that word, electeds. Never heard of that word, local electeds and farmers. Last week, U.S. EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin traveled to Huger, South Carolina, alongside with the Vice President to Nucor Steel Berkeley, attended Charleston, South Carolina roundtable hosted by the South Carolina Manufacturers Association. Okay, great. EPA completes cost recovery for cleanup work done at U.S. Technology Superfund site in Berger, Missouri. This is an oldie but a goodie. I remember reading about this long, long time ago. U.S. EPA's announced a cost recovery settlement where private settling parties settling federal agencies recovered $2.4 million for cleanup work performed by EPA's Region 7 Superfund program. Between 2018 and 19, EPA Region 7 performed work at the U.S. Technology Superfund site in Berger, Missouri, to remove 13 million pounds of hazardous waste that had been transferred to the site allegedly by U.S. Technology Corporation from the Hydromex site in Yazoo City, Mississippi, as well as multiple storage facilities in Arkansas, Georgia, and Ohio, and Utah. The waste consisted of spent blast media. I imagine that means abrasive blasting, or what we used to call sandblasting, because just looking at the heavy metals here, those are normally metals that were in old coatings. Now, lead is obvious, but cadmium and chromium also. These customers included settling parties, agencies, namely AAR Landing Gear, Boeing, Lockheed Martin, Space Gateway Support, U.S. Department of Defense, U.S. Coast Guard, National Aeronautics and Space Administration. Let's see how this is. Again, this is a settlement agreement here. Right, so when you're reading these, what are you looking at? You're looking at the jurisdiction, right? That's always the number one is jurisdiction. Then the background here, parties bound to settlement agreements, right? Binds things. And some the definition section is always put in there. And payment to settling parties for past response costs. Within 30 days after the effective date, settling parties shall pay the EPA $407,000, and it gives you payment instructions. Right? And penalty, right, with that. And that's all that's in there with this one, right? So this is from May 3rd of last week, in case you missed an Administrator Zeldin in Newsweek, stated the, EPA, right, next to organizational improvements, right, they released next phase of organizational improvements to better provide clean air, water, and land for all Americans and integrate science into agency offices. With this action, EPA is delivering organizational improvements to the personal structure that will directly benefit. So what do we have here? Just making things more efficient, right? We'll see what happens. All right. So Administrator Zeldin had written an op-ed that you do not have a choice. It's a false choice between stewardship and economic development. We'll see with that. Where that's going to go. That's probably for a longer program there. Right against up against the hour. I don't want to go too long here. Some other stuff, right, with the administration news. There's regulatory relief to promote domestic from production of critical medicines. So if you recall, right, now that we're having issues with China and the tariffs and everything else, right, there are a lot of reports out there, you know, with stuff. The right, a lot of our medicine is made overseas. We want to bring it back to the United States. This way we're not, everybody doesn't have us by the gonads here with this. So, the purpose, right? So what are we going to do? It is a policy in the United States that the regulation of manufacturing pharmaceutical products and inputs be streamlined to facilitate the restoration of a robust domestic pharmaceutical manufacturing base. Problem with all of this stuff from Trump, it's going to take 4 or 5 years to get this stuff together. Doesn't matter what it is, right? Within 180 days of the date of this order, Secretary of Health and Human Services, through Commissioner of Food and Drugs, FDA Commissioner, shall review existing regulations and guidance that pertain to the development of domestic pharmaceutical manufacturing and shall take steps to eliminate any duplicative or unnecessary requirements, right, in such regulations and guidance. And then going down, evaluate the current risk-based approach. The FDA commissioner shall evaluate the current risk-based approach for prior approval of licensure inspections. identify and undertake measures necessary to expand existing programs, identify and undertake measures necessary to improve enforcement of data reporting under Section 510J3 of the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, provide clearer guidance regarding requirements or recommendations of site changes, review as appropriate, seek to update any relevant compliance policies. All right. And you know, we're going to reserve the rest for tomorrow night's show here. All right, I can't do everything in one night. So that's what I got for tonight. Thanks for listening. And for Safety Wars and the Safety FM Network, we will see you back tomorrow. This is Jim Polzel from deep in the heart of Region 3.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.